The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. Please like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View Radio network. All right, today we are going to be joined by an old friend, a guy that worked for Big Blue View as a contributor way back in the day and has now gone on to far bigger and better things. I'm joined today by Joe DeLeon. Joe, nice to chat with you. Nice to see you, and nice to see that you're doing well.
Yeah, Ed, I appreciate you having me on. I've snuck my way onto Chris and Nick's show a couple of times when they need me for some bi-week filler content. So it's been a while since I've hopped on your show, so I'm excited to hop on and talk a little bit about these draft prospects coming up, and it's always good to catch up.
Yeah, see, you're invited onto the A show today.
I was trying to say that without saying it, but I'll let you take the heat from Chris on that one.
Yeah, well, I'm the boss, so I can get away with saying that kind of stuff, even if it's not true, even if Chris and Nick do terrific work, and I couldn't run this site as successfully as I hope we do without those two guys. So now that I took my cheap shot, now I'll take it back and say nice things.
Of course.
All right. So, Joe, I know that, you know, one of the things that I like to do is I like to focus on prospects from certain schools at times. And I try to do that with folks that know those schools really well. And I know you're a big Notre Dame guy. I know that in the past you've done Notre Dame oriented podcasts, which I know you've moved on from, but I'm going to ask you to put your Notre Dame hat on today, and kind of throw some Notre Dame players at you just for comment and your thoughts on those guys, how they might fit with the Giants. And later on, maybe we'll get into what the Giants might do at number six and all of that stuff. So let's start with some Notre Dame guys. I find myself in a really, really odd position considering how bad the Giants have been on the offensive line, you know, for a decade now, a decade or more. I find myself in the really odd position with a player available probably at six, a player who might be available, thinking offensive line is the wrong way for the Giants to go at number six. But I want you to tell me just what you think of Joe Alt, the left tackle from Notre Dame, what kind of player you think he's going to be. And there is one bit of criticism that I've heard about Alt, that he might not be physical enough. You know, just what you think of that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, removing the Notre Dame bias on him, I think that this has to be one of the most prototypical left tackle prospects that's come out in a very long time. And I talk about that in especially the fact that he is just so massive. The length that he brings to the position, he's a little bit under 6'9". He's well over 300 pounds. And one of the things that I had on him that I was really focused on from the summer coming into the season is, could he really fill out his frame more? Because before that, he was built almost like a basketball player. He was so lean in certain parts of his body, which isn't great, especially in the lower half for an offensive tackle, but he's really filled out, which we saw especially at the NFL Combine. I understand why some folks might feel that Joe Alt's not physical enough, but my counterpoint for that is I think when you watch him on film, he's just one of those players that makes everything look so much easier than it actually is. So you almost feel like watching Joe Alt, he's not being physical. You know, he's not fighting with guys as much as other offensive line prospects might be. But because he's so tall and long, he doesn't really need to do that. Guys don't really get into his chest the way that other prospects might deal with defensive linemen. So he's able to play at a more composed, consistent, easy technique than some of these other guys that we've talked about for the 2024 NFL draft. I really love the thought of, and I don't know, it doesn't really work physically one-to-one, but I like the thought of him being comparable to Joe Thomas, who was just such an easy prospect, never really was a mauler, never really was a guy who was burying defenders into the ground, but was just so consistently fluid and easy as a blocker and as a kick setter that it made things look easier than it actually was. I really think that Joe Alt is one of three guys in this draft class that is going to step in right away, be a phenomenal pro, and could be an all-pro for 5 to 10+ years for the amount of time that he's in the NFL.
It's just very, very odd to cover the New York Giants and look at the sixth pick and look at the possibility that a player like that might be there. And as bad as the Giants were on the offensive line last year, you look at that and you say, offensive tackle's just not the way to go. It just isn't.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat because, especially after free agency, my thought this whole time leading up to free agency was, okay, we could see the Giants take Joe Alt at six and plug him in at right tackle, which feels like a little bit of a misuse on Joe Alt's part because he could be such a great left tackle, but you don't want to move around Andrew Thomas and then move Evan Neal into guard, who his physical profile and his issues could fit a little bit better in at guard, especially we've seen some balance issues with him. It could make a little bit more sense for him to play in tighter quarters, but the Giants were aggressive in signing multiple interior offensive linemen. So I don't know what you would do with Evan Neal, and it doesn't feel like, especially because they haven't tried to trade him, that they're going to give up on him just yet. So I think at the end of the day, like you're talking about here, it doesn't really make much sense for the Giants at six particularly to draft somebody like Joe Alt. But I would argue that maybe in the later rounds on day two, with the amount of potentially developmental tackles that are available and on the board, that could be the direction that they go in.
And that leads to where I wanted to go next, Joe. The Evan Neal discussion and so much gnashing of teeth in the Giants fan base. Giants GM Joe Shane has been insistent all offseason that he still believes Evan Neal can be a right tackle. I don't know if Evan Neal can be a top tier right tackle. I have doubts about that. I don't know if Evan Neal's going to open the season as the Giants right tackle. I think the Giants want to go into the spring and give him an opportunity. But Jermaine Illuminor is a guy that they signed in free agency who's been a solid right tackle for the last couple of years. So it's possible that they look at Neal in the spring and think it's just not happening and we have to move the guy. But I know their initial plan is to leave Neal there. I think Illuminor has a 2-year contract. So that leads me to another Notre Dame offensive lineman, guy that I happen to like, a guy that I think might be a third round pick, might be a fourth round pick, but guy who is, I think, a kid who could be a good NFL right tackle someday. And that's Blake Fisher. Just tell me a little bit about Blake, a little bit about where you think, about where you think he might fit in the draft and if he could be a guy, long-term who can be an NFL starter at that spot.
Yeah. Also, by the way, apologies for the terrible lighting that I'm going to have for the next 5 minutes. The sun managed to sneak right through the shades that I put up. It's the morning time for me where I'm taping, and the sun is always been a struggle for when I try to tape in the mornings. But I do like Blake Fisher, I think, more than the general consensus does. For whatever reason, a lot of people have knocked him as a prospect. I think, though, and he had a little bit of unwillingness to play inside a guard, and I think that he has the profile that would suit him as a really good guard, but does have the frame and the just general movement capability to play right tackle in the NFL. He's a former highly recruited kid, former five-star, and a lot of times when you have those five-star traits, it could be translatable to the NFL. I do think, though, he does have some flexibility issues, and we do kind of see not as much capable athleticism that you typically look for in a starting right tackle. For me, I graded him out as a late day two pick, early day three pick, somebody who at the very least could be a really good backup right tackle. So maybe that goes in line with the Giants' needs, as I mentioned a second ago, where you come around in the fourth round and you're thinking to yourself, okay, we need a little bit more depth. We want to bring some youth into the room and maybe somebody that could develop into a starter. I think Blake Fisher can certainly fit that description.
All right, let me throw another one at you. Giants obviously are losing cornerback Adoree Jackson in free agency. They drafted Tay Banks in the first round a year ago, but they really need, I still think they should go out and sign a veteran cornerback, which they still might. They've been known to have interest in former Buffalo Bill Tre'Davious White, but I would think they would want to add more youth to that room. And a guy that I like is Cam Hart of Notre Dame. I like the size. I like the athleticism. Give me your thoughts on Hart.
Yeah, I'm also a really big fan of Cam Hart, and he actually reminds me a lot of a guy that Giants fans are really familiar with, and that being James Bradberry. He is the prototype that we look for in corners that are going to play in zone-specific schemes. He's 6'3". I believe he's touching a little bit under 200 pounds. You talked about the athleticism. For guys that are that big, they tend to be really leggy. They tend to be slow to transition. They also tend to not have some of the better 40 times, but he showed up at the combine and was just extremely explosive. And the length shows up all of the time on film. For me, what was an eye-opener was the Senior Bowl, because there's been some inconsistency with his health and his availability for Notre Dame at times. Somebody who I thought would have declared for last draft, but I think, again, that inconsistently of being on the field as often as he could be resulted in him deciding to come back for this past 2023 season. But Cam Hart, you're going to get a guy who's not only well-coached, but just has really good, strong instincts for how much football he's played, how much he's been around a really good defensive coaching staff. And I really think he could be one of the better zone corners in the NFL, depending on the situation he lands in.
All right, I have two more that I want to ask you about, Joe. I want to ask you about running back Audric Estime. Of course, the Giants are moving on from Saquon Barkley, signed with the Eagles. And I know that Giants fans are still stung by that one. You know, I never thought that the Giants were going to pay Barkley the kind of money that the Eagles did. Giants signed, Devin Singletary, but they're obviously looking for compliments to Singletary. Estime's a big, big power back. I look at him as sort of an inside runner. He might compliment a guy like Devin Singletary fairly well. Just your thoughts on Estime and whether he might fit with the Giants.
Yeah, Estime has been a really confusing prospect throughout this process, because on film you see him have pretty good breakaway speed for a bowling ball, thicker running back. There's a lot of times on film where he does separate, he does really pull away from defenders, but his 40 time at the combine was so much worse than I think any of us in the draft community expected. He runs in the 4.7s. He does improve it at his pro day, running more in the 4.5s. But what you see on film with a guy like Estime is somebody who's going to dominate in short areas, somebody who's really physical. He's going to be able to create extra yardage for himself because he's got that really aggressive leg churn He is the power back in a running back duo that I think the modern NFL is shifting towards, as you talked about, finding a complement for Devin Singletary. That is the new mold where if you don't have to have this premier guy, a premier running back, and pay him, and it's clear that the Giants are moving away from doing that because they let Saquon Barkley walk, it's good to have multiple running backs that can do multiple things. I almost would think of Audric Estime as a more explosive Gus Edwards that we saw with the Ravens for a period of time, and now who's going to be a Los Angeles Charger. He was their go-to when they needed a big hulking presence to run the ball between the tackles and pick up those extra yards. And I think Estime has a little bit more of an extra gear that makes him a little bit more dangerous than a guy like Gus Edwards. But depending on where he lands, he has that ability to be a productive and a consistent presence within a running back room.
Sure. The last one I want to ask you about is a guy who's kind of under the radar, but a guy who I know the Giants have looked at a little bit and have invited to their local pro day, sort of an under the radar guy. And that would be Javonte Jean-Baptiste, edge defender for the Fighting Irish. That's a place where the Giants need some depth, even after the big trade for Brian Burns, which probably the biggest swing of Joe Shane's tenure so far. Azeez Ojulari's been a disappointment the last couple of years because of injuries. So they need depth there. And he's a kid I know they've been interested in. So just your thoughts on him and whether he can be an NFL player.
Yeah, I think that, as you mentioned there, the Giants need depth. And Jean-Baptiste, he fits that description of depth for any team that's going to take him somewhere in the middle to the end of day three. He's somebody who's been under-talked about throughout this process, especially because he wasn't even originally invited to the Senior Bowl. He gets the late nod and the late invite, and he had a pretty quality week, as good as he could have done. He's an underrated athlete. He's got the requisite frame that you're looking for in an NFL defensive end. I think he sticks for that reason, and especially because he's got experience playing for some premier programs, being Ohio State and for Notre Dame. But again, he really does hit that description of what you're talking about. A team that's just looking for some extra bodies, that's going to play some special teams, that has all the physical tools, but maybe not the production or the ability to become a starting player within your defense. But I definitely think that being Jean-Baptiste, assuming maybe he does well at the Giants pro day, or local day rather, as you're saying, could find his way somewhere on day three.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Joe, let's turn to the topic with the Giants that seems to be on everybody's minds these days, and that is what they do at number six. Let me just put it this way. We know that there's been so much talk about quarterback. Will they trade up for a quarterback? Will that be J.J. McCarthy? Will they just sit there and take whatever wide receiver happens to fall, whether that's you know, somehow if it's Marvin Harrison, or which I don't think that's going to happen, but whether it be Malik Nabers, whether it be Roma Dunze, are you buying or selling on the idea that the Giants might, you know, might make a big move and try to go up and get a quarterback?
I'm not completely selling on the thought that that's possible for the Giants to take that swing. I think right now what concerns me is the market that's heating up for JJ McCarthy. It sounds like from what everybody's talked about that there has been some pretty significant interest for the Giants and JJ McCarthy. If the Giants were going to go and make this move, I'd much rather it be for Drake May, who I have graded as my second quarterback in this class. JJ McCarthy for me has a lot of similarities to Daniel Jones in a lot of the issues that, you know, just the natural decision making, the natural feel for the game, not really having the tangible plays on film from college that make me excited that it's going to translate to the NFL. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense if you're the Giants to make that transition to a younger version of a guy who's been inconsistent for you already that you're paying a ton of money to. I feel like it's still capably on the radar, though, considering the amount of buzz that this has generated and that it's been talked about. And maybe the move by the Vikings to acquire that second first-round pick could expedite the aggressiveness by the Giants to move into that four spot. But it just feels as though the position that they're in with all the money that they're paying to Daniel Jones, it makes way more sense for them to draft a receiver at that sixth spot. And the guy who's made so much sense to me the entire time, unless Marvin Harrison Jr. slides all the way to six, which I don't think is going to happen, especially because at five, the Chargers don't really have very many receivers except for Quentin Johnston, who was horrendous as a rookie. He's probably going to be the Chargers pick. Malik Nabers makes the most sense for me for the Giants. I like Roma Dunze. I think that he is very close to where Malik Nabers is in my grading. And I think Adunze is going to be a really dominant vertical threat, as well as a guy who has been really consistent in contested situations. But for me with Malik Nabers, he brings an element that the Giants just haven't had since Odell Beckham Jr. There's been a lot of comparisons, especially by me, to Malik Nabers, from Malik Nabers to Odell Beckham Jr., in the sense that they both were so electric after the catch. And I think that Nabers' shiftiness, his quick feet, his easy route running makes him such a dangerous threat. For whatever reason, we've seen the Giants try and go after and get guys like Kenny Golladay, who are these bigger, more physical presences that haven't really worked out. And I think it's time to take a chance on somebody who's going to run his routes really effectively and consistently. He's going to create separation, is going to be a spark plug for Daniel Jones when he delivers him the football.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there, Joe. Let's talk about the wide receiver thing first. I happen to be an Odunze guy, maybe partially because I look at the Giants roster and I see Darius Slayton, I see Jalin Hyatt, I see a smaller sort of possession guy in Wandale Robinson, and I see a completely different skill set with Odunze that they don't have. I certainly am not going to kick and scream if they like Nabers over Odunze, you know, where I feel the other way, because I can certainly see the argument for Nabers. Just the explosive playmaking, the yards after catch and all of that. So I don't think Giants fans should kick either way.
Yes. Yes. I think that's the best way to put it, is that they're both very gifted. They're both very talented. They're just different. So that's mm-hmm. the best way to put it, that if you're a Giants fan, I'd be just more excited that they're actually spending early draft capital on a capable receiver. You know, we're not going the Kadarius Toney route, who was questionably a first round pick. And I don't think it would have necessarily been a first round pick when he was taken, if it wasn't for that whole trade back scenario. I just think that if you're a Giants fan, to be excited about that top 10 selection going to one guy that could be really impactful early on for you. And again, as you're saying here, They're just really different football players. That is one thing, though, that has kind of stuck in my mind. You're talking about with, you know, Wandale Robinson, as he's been more consistently healthy, could be emerging into this impactful, underrated slot receiving threat. It might not really benefit your receiving room to bring in Malik Nabers, who is just a little bit bigger than him. You would like to have somebody who could be a contested jump ball guy. I would also maybe argue that it doesn't hurt for the Giants to maybe double dip and look for one of those guys a little bit later on in the draft.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about Wandale Robinson. We had an opportunity to talk to him at the very end of the season, you know, in the sort of what they call baggy day, as guys are, you know, wrapping up and heading home. And he was kind of wistful at the end of the season, because he was like, you know, I wish this wasn't over, because he had the Achilles, the ACL surgery, you know, about two-thirds of the way through his rookie year. And he said, I'm just now starting to feel like myself. And next year, I know I'm going to be even better, feel even better than I do now. And he was looking forward to that. And obviously, you know, those are just words and you have to prove that on the field. But I think there's possibilities there with Wandale Robinson. So it's just interesting. As you said, though, I don't think Giants fans should kick either way.
Yeah. And just a final thought on Robinson there. He's such an interesting player, because you hear so many other pros talk about him and talk so highly of him. I forget who it was recently. There was one defensive player. I might have been Micah Parsons on his show that was talking about how he's like a really underrated player in the NFL. It's just he hasn't been available. He's been consistently hurt for such a long time that it's hard to get him onto the field. But again, if whichever guy that you add to the room is going to be great for the Giants, I would actually argue that, like, I look at what Miami has done in having a lot of smaller, more compact receivers. They don't really have that big body threat, and the results that they've produced have been ridiculous. It's been tremendous, the receiving production that they've gotten from Tyreek Hill and from Jalen Waddle. Understandably, those are two extremely rare players and elite players, but Malik Nabers has the potential to be as productive as Tyreek Hill, to be as productive as Jalen Waddle. And if we're moving towards this more compact, space-eating style approach as some receiving rooms are starting to adopt, I think it could work for the Giants.
Well, it's also interesting because I asked Joe Shane a while back about what Brian Daboll likes in wide receivers, and it's interesting because the discussion of the basketball theory had come up, where you want each guy to have a different sort of skill set. And I asked Joe about that, and he said all Brian Daboll cares about is guys who can separate. He said, if you can separate and catch the football and do something with it once you catch it, you know, that's what Brian Daboll wants. And if you think about Buffalo, they had smaller guys. They didn't have the big, you know, 50-50 contested catch guy. That's what he worked with in Buffalo. And that leads more to Malik Nabers, I think, than it does to Romo Dunze.
Well, so that's the biggest thing there, is the most productive guy for Buffalo when he was there was Stephon Diggs. And when he added him to the room, that was really important for Josh Allen's development and for his recent string of success, was having that consistent option. And I don't think there's really much comparison that can happen here with Stephon Diggs and with Malik Nabers, but, you know, one could also make the argument of both are really good route runners, both create that separation that you're talking about. And I find that really interesting that he brings up separation. And that to me is probably one of the biggest signals to Malik Nabers being the guy that they're leaning with. Both Odunze and Nabers obviously create separation because they're both great linear athletes. But if there's one guy who fits the, you know, the word, the characteristic separation, it's Malik Nabers, because he does it before the catch, he does it after the catch. He is just such an electric playmaker. And he's one of those guys, as we're talking about here for Giants fans, who they'd be excited about, me being a Giants fan. If they took Malik Nabers, I would be ecstatic. It would be one of the few times that I would feel really, really good about the Giants' first round selection. And he just feels like somebody who's one of the few that's going to really pan out and work out in the NFL.
Okay. And the other part of what you had said earlier that I wanted to unpack is I wanted to go back to McCarthy, JJ McCarthy and Drake May a little bit. And you mentioned Daniel Jones in talking about McCarthy. And I find that interesting because when I look at Drake May, I look at Drake May and you see all of the fantastic arm talent. You see the movement, you see the ability to throw off platform going to his left. You see all of that. And then you see some of the weirdness of some of the things he was stuck dealing with in the North Carolina offense and all of that. But when I look at Drake May, everybody uses the ceiling of Justin Herbert. And if you want to go ceiling and floor, I use the floor for Drake May of Daniel Jones. I just use that floor, maybe just because they're physically similar. But I tend to use that floor, but I never really thought about a JJ McCarthy sort of Daniel Jones comparison, maybe because they came from different types of programs and were used so much differently. I mean, Daniel Jones had to be the best player for Duke all the time if they were going to compete at any sort of a high level. And that remains the big question everybody has about JJ McCarthy is they never really asked him to be their best player.
The reason why I make that comparison is that we've seen enough of Daniel Jones to know he has every physical tool that you look for. And especially when you're drafting a guy, he checks all the boxes, big, strong, can throw on the run, can be an impactful player as a runner if you need to call on him to do so. He's done all those things at a pretty high level in the NFL. Like the highlights of Daniel Jones have been tremendous. When he's on and he's played well, he's looked great. He's looked like a starting NFL quarterback that could stick with the franchise for 10 years. But all of the issues that have come down for Daniel Jones have been just natural processing and ability to react in adverse situations. When he's turned the ball over, it's been because he's made the wrong read, the wrong decision. He's forced something. He doesn't see the field the way that he should. Or the thing that's been the most nerve-wracking is his inability to sense pressure. That is something that I feel like we've talked about a million times over with Daniel Jones, is that it's just constantly not sensing pressure and acknowledging when he needs to escape the pocket and get the ball out. The reason why I make that comparison is I watch JJ McCarthy, who, you're right, situationally, it's very, very different. But whenever he struggles and he makes mistakes, it's because for whatever reason, that switch, that natural just feel for the game to be a playmaker sometimes isn't there. They both have this weird ability to make easy things look hard. And the one example that I point to, and it's very specific, and some might question if it's fair for me to make this, you know, this as my example that I point to, but in the Rose Bowl on the first drive, I believe it was his first throw, he's pressured. He tries to throw the ball away, tries to throw it out of bounds, which is such a natural, simple procedure for a quarterback. And it almost nearly gets picked off by Caleb Downs had his feet not been on the sideline. I think something like that is an indicator to me of he might have all the tools, but why does he keep making these silly, dumb mistakes? And is he ever going to outgrow them? And just also plainly removing and separate from the Daniel Jones comparison, I have concerns about JJ McCarthy because he has never been called upon to be the guy to win the game. He's never been a player who, when nothing's working, that Michigan has turned to him and he has taken over a football game. I need that from a quarterback. Drake May has done that plenty of times. Caleb Williams has done that a ton of times, and so has Jane Daniels. I don't have examples of JJ McCarthy doing it.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, but I think you'll agree with this. I mean, you know, we are able to look at, you know, at games, we're able to look at film, we're able to look at highlights, we're able to look at all of that. But all of these decisions for NFL teams come down to so much more than what we're able to see. It comes down to what organizations think. It comes down to what they hear about players from college coaches, high school coaches, mentors, anybody that's worked with these guys. Comes down to personal impressions from these interviews. You know, what these guys, the work these guys do on whiteboards to explain, you know, plays, good plays and bad plays. So there's just, I get frustrated with people sometimes because it's like, oh, I see on YouTube that JJ McCarthy can't throw going to his left. Well, what did he do at the pro day? He threw a ball 65 yards perfectly on target going to his left in the pro day, which, yeah, it's not live and all of that, but you can also go find examples on YouTube of him making those throws in games. But, you know, my point being, I think you'll agree with, for all of these teams, it comes down to so much more than what we're able to see.
Yeah, it's such a complicated process, especially for quarterbacks, because of the extra attention to detail that goes into it, because you're entrusting the future direction of your team and potentially a contract extension that's going to be worth exorbitant amounts of money. You want to find early success with that. And I also, though, I would argue that I think NFL teams sometimes overanalyze these things. And I have been comparing, you brought up the Justin Herbert comparison for Drake May that's been brought up. I also love to bring up CJ Stroud when talking about Drake May, that he is going to be getting this treatment, and he has been getting this treatment of, well, he doesn't really project the leadership qualities, or, you know, he's raw, but he doesn't consistently make the plays that you need him to make on a game-to-game basis, a snap-to-snap basis. But the most natural guys in those draft classes were CJ Stroud and Justin Herbert, and they hit the ground running and they had tremendous starts to their careers. I think sometimes the NFL overthinks this process, as you're talking about. You know, you can get every single inch of detail on a quarterback prospect, but sometimes the film is what we really need to rely on, and the film can really tell us a lot more than we're really willing to pay attention to.
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing we know about quarterbacks is as much time and effort as NFL teams put into these guys, the reality of it is, in my view, if you're in love with a guy, you take the swing. You know, you take the swing.
Yes.
But the reality of it is, NFL teams get it wrong more often than they get it right. But this is the last thing I'll throw at you. And I wrote this the other day. I think, and it's the reason why I always go back, and, you know, Dave Gettleman might have gotten it wrong when he drafted Daniel Jones, okay? But I will always say that at the time, Gettleman made the right call for the simple reason that he believed in Jones. He was in love with Jones. He thought Jones was the right guy. And for me, I think it's a worse sin for a general manager not to take the swing on a guy that you really, really, really think can be that guy, and then watch him go be that guy for somebody else, than to take the swing and get it wrong.
That is also something I think that's constantly overlooked in this process that's really important to bring up, is the aspect of, one, if you're in love with a guy and you really think that he's going to change your franchise and you've done all the due diligence, you've done all the work, that's the opportunity to take somebody. And that's also why I would argue throughout this process, we keep hearing this connection between the Giants and JJ McCarthy. They're clearly doing their due diligence. They're clearly expressing interest. There is going to be conversations had by the Giants to try and find a way, I would assume, to be in a position to draft him. And if they love him, they should absolutely do it. But I also love to throw out there the opposite of this, and this is less applicable for the Giants and more applicable for a team like the Patriots, a team like the Commanders. If you're not in love with the options, don't force it. That, to me, also, I think, is probably one of the biggest death sentences for general managers, for young quarterbacks, for head coaches, is when they think to themselves, we have to go get a quarterback. We just have to take who's available. If we don't take one this year, we're going to be so messed up next year. We're going to be in bad footing and bad positioning. And if you're not in love with a guy and you're not ready to help him develop and improve and you're not in love with his personality, that's what leads to complete separations of relationships between the quarterback and a franchise. Like, I think of Trey Lance as the easiest example. You know, Trey Lance was clearly not as liked by Kyle Shanahan as he was by John Lynch. And that has quickly led to him being out the door and now being with the Dallas Cowboys. So those are the two sides to this, where if you don't love somebody, don't force it. But at the same time, you don't want to miss out on that opportunity if you think somebody is going to be a surefire franchise changing player.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good place for us to end it. It certainly has been entertaining watching the light change on your side of the screen here for the last few minutes.
It's really dumb. It is so cloudy in the mornings in California where I live. And so I sat down not even thinking, I've got a shade here where the sun usually comes from. And as soon as it started hitting my face, I'm like, oh, you have to be kidding me.
It's been enjoyable. But hey, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the insight. And best of luck to you. You're over at the Believe Network these days. I know you said you've got another opportunity coming here pretty soon. So good luck to you with all of that. And hopefully we'll get you back on the show every so often to talk a little NFL, talk a little draft.
Of course, Ed, appreciate you having me on. And it was always, as I said earlier, it's great to catch up. And hopefully the Giants, they make the right decision and they get a guy that's going to be a franchise changer and not another guy that holds them back.
All right. Giants fans, thank you very, very much for listening. Please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.